Howdy, folks. This episode of the podcast, we sat down and we kind of discussed Game of Thrones and the final season and just some things about the show that we liked, didn't liked. We talked about some issues that people had a lot of problems with and, you know, whether I disagreed with it or agreed with it. And if I disagreed with it, why I didn't think it was something bad. It was cool to talk about. Had a lot of fun. I spent the last few weeks actually writing down a lot of notes that I would just think of randomly to mention. But I do want to say a lot of spoilers ahead. If you haven't watched the final season, if you're not caught up with Game of Thrones, don't listen to this yet. As for how the podcast goes, this is our second episode. I feel like we did a lot better job of kind of writing out like plot points and keeping it organized. And we had an intro. Let me know what you guys think. Obviously, episode two, it's still a big work in progress. But give me some feedback, guys. I'm willing to kind of take people's advice. So for the rest of you, just sit back and enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Iconic Fanboy Podcast. Please welcome your host, Derek.
What's going on, nerds? Welcome to the show. Last night, we wrapped up season 8, final episode of the final season, season finale for Game of Thrones. This season has been kind of under some heat, if you will. A lot of people have had some problems with it. I disagree with some of their problems. I agree with some things. We're going to get into all that. But my initial thoughts on the season were it did feel rushed. It's not as bad as I think some people were making it out to be, but it just felt weird. It felt strange. It felt like it lacked emotion. There's some notable character deaths. I just felt like nothing. Jorah Mormont was one of my favorite characters, and when he died, I was like, I figured if he's going to die, he'd be protecting Dany, but it just felt nothing. Like, there was no emotion. It wasn't like the Red Wedding when I was, screaming at my TV, or when Ned got his head cut off, and I was just like, whoa, wait, what? That was my first. I hadn't heard anything about the show. I didn't know there was books. Someone just told me I needed to watch Game of Thrones, and they gave me a bootleg copy. Don't worry, HBO, I've since then bought all of seasons on Blu-ray, so it is what it is. I'm sorry. Anyway, I started watching the show from there, got into it, started reading the books. It's a good series. And the books, the show started off exactly like the book. The first season and the first book are more or less exactly the same, more so than most shows. But it did start to branch off, and I think it's in a completely different direction now than the books. But let's get into it. So I want to start by talking about some things with the show that people had a lot of problems with. I'm not going to talk about, coffee cups and water bottles, because that's just, it is what it is. I'm not going to say it's a lack of effort, but obviously it just goes to show potentially how rushed this show is, or the last season of the show has been, or just how much it's been under a microscope. So let's talk about things that people have complaining about. First and foremost is it being rushed and not well written. I don't think it's right to say the show is not well written. It's just not written in the same method that the first five seasons were. There's a guy on Twitter who wrote a long thing. I wish I could find it again and share it. If someone has it and could send it to me, I'd love to share it. But he talks about two different writing styles for when you're writing a show or a book, whatever. There's two types. There's called pantsing and there's plotting. Plotting is where you write out an outline of plot points of what you want to happen within this story. Then what you do then is you kind of fill in the details in between. So, this is going to happen, this is going to happen, this is going to happen. This is what happens in between that leads to this. Pantsing is a type of writing style that George R.R. Martin uses in his books. And that's where you flush out these really detailed characters and you give them like these unique personalities. And the story is dictated by these characters and what they do and the cause and effects of their actions. And it's basically like, you know, you plant a little seed, you make this character, and then that character grows and grows and grows, and you're doing that with all your characters. Next thing you know, you just have a whole bunch of characters very well fleshed out, and they're all doing different things. It's just two different writing styles. Pantsing tends to be more detailed, more character-driven, things of that nature. Plotting tends to be, you know, more like more to the point of like the story. Like, okay, I would put it this way. You read some books, you know, we'll use Harry Potter for example. You know at the end of the book Harry Potter's going to win. You know at the end of Star Wars the good guys are going to win. It's just how they get there. It's more of like the journey of than the story itself, which Game of Thrones is the story itself. You don't really know who's going to win or who's going to lose or who's going to die because no one's safe. You know, the character's own actions are going to act, their actions will have an accurate cause and effect. Hence in point when Robb Stark, you know, betrays his vow, if that's the right word, and decides not to marry the Frey girl and marry the girl he meets. Henceforth, you know, betrayed the guy, and then that guy betrays him and kills him and most of his family, that sort of thing. So neither of those writing styles is wrong. It's kind of hard to go from something that was written one way to the final two or three seasons being written completely differently. And I also feel one thing that has hurt the show is I feel like HBO said, hey, you've got X amount of episodes to wrap this story up, wrap it up. And that's what they had to do. So they had to rush a lot, and I don't like it. I know everyone else doesn't like it, but unfortunately, it's what they had to do. So that's kind of the two different, that's your two different writing styles. You've got pantsing versus plotting, and I think that's what happened. I think, you know, we start off with a deep, you know, much slower show, to, okay, now we have to get from here to here in this amount of episodes. And they sped it up, and it definitely sucks because we feel like we missed out on a lot. A lot of people are mad saying that, you know, like I said, once again, the show has gone downhill. These episodes or these newest seasons suck. I don't think that's fair. I definitely think that the latest seasons aren't the best seasons of the show. But it's still pretty damn good. It just sucks to see a show that more or less went from like its first few seasons, like the you know the real beginning, being the best to you know being not as good. Like typically, I think when you watch a show, it tends to start out not as good as when it finishes. So this just was kind of reversed. It's unfortunate, but I'm not like at the end of the day, I'm not super mad about it. We'll have the books to read. The books tell a much deeper story, and we'll get, you know, maybe the ending that we want or a more satisfying ending from the books. So people have also been very upset with Jaime Lannister's character arc or story arc. I don't really think Jaime has a story arc, really. I mean, I know he's a very detailed character, but I think his character, he's not a redemption character. Like, you know, in some books you've got that guy who is evil, who turns, you know, good at the end and does the right thing. I think that's what people were expecting from Jaime, and it's not what we got. But I think, honestly, if you go back and you watch the whole series again, you'll see that Jaime's character hasn't really changed. He's always been that guy. He's always been the guy that'll do whatever it takes to get back to Cersei. And that's who he's been this whole time. That's really his flaw, his drawback is his love for his sister. It causes him to do things that are wrong. Like, for example, pushing a 10-year-old boy out of a tower window. That's a pretty terrible thing to do. And it made all of us hate him because that was the first thing we ever saw him do. And then you heard him, he was called the Kingslayer. You're like, okay, this guy betrayed his vow of a Kingsguard and killed his king. Like, that's like the, you know, you just don't do that. So that's what we got from Jaime. And then we got to see his character had some more depth. You know, he killed the king because the king wanted to kill everyone in the city. And, you know, like he says, you know, you have so many, take so many oaths as a knight to protect the people, as a Kingsguard to protect the king. Like, well, what happens when the king wants to kill the people? You know, he kept it to himself, mostly the reasons why he killed the king. So he is viewed as a bad guy. But at the end of the day, he's not good or bad. He's much more of a gray character. But he has always been someone who will do whatever it takes to get back to Cersei. And I think that's the thing people forget. Even when he made his oaths to Catelyn Stark, that was more or less to get out of imprisonment and get back to Cersei. And then was it season 6 when he joins the Freys, him and Braum join the Freys to take Riverrun back. And he tells the Blackfish, he goes, I'll kill every man, woman, and child in this city to get back to Cersei. Like, everything he's done is to get back to Cersei. So when he went back to Cersei, I wasn't really surprised. It's same thing his character's done constantly throughout the show, has always been get back to her. I did, however, the thing that bugged me about when he fought Euron. Like, he just magically ran into Euron. Like, right as Euron's getting back to shore from jumping off his ship, like, that whole thing felt out of place. Like, I'm not mad that they fought, and I think it was natural for their characters to fight, but I think it should have been more of a Euron runs into him as he's trying to get Cersei out, and they fight then and there, whatever. That felt weird. But Jaime's character, I don't think his story was a waste. A lot of people said, you know, the whole Jaime's story arc was a waste because he just died with Cersei. I don't think it was a waste. I think that his point of a character was to show us that not everyone is just, he's in the gray, he's in the middle. He's not necessarily a bad guy. See, it's hard for me to say that. I don't want to say he's not a bad guy because he was a bad guy. He pushed a kid out of a window. He did a lot of really bad things, but then he also did a lot of really good things. So I think that's his character's point, is to show us that there's not, you know, one specific way. He did things that were bad, and he did things that were good. He did things that were really bad, and he did things that were really good. You know, he pushed a boy out of a window. Well, he saved 500,000 people in King's Landing. You know, he killed his cousin to get back to Cersei. He then almost sacrificed himself to save Brienne. You know, he does a lot. It's a yin and yang type of thing. So I'm not mad at his character. I just kind of wanted to point that out to some people, that I think a lot of people thought he was that redemption character who was going to have that redeeming story arc, and he just wasn't. And it is what it is. Another thing that people I've seen get mad about is how Arya came out of nowhere to kill the Night King. I felt that way at first. I was like, you know, where did she jump from? Did she climb a tree? She just runs by all these White Walkers. Like, you know, what's going on? How come no one was watching? However, if you go back and you watch that episode, you watch the part where Jon is trying to get past the dragon. He's trying to get into the Weirwood, where Bran is, where Theon is, where the Night King. Trying to get to where all that stuff is happening, but he can't. There's a dragon in the way. The White Walkers all have their back to that door because they have a dragon guarding it. They're not concerned. You know, they're not. If you go back and you watch that scene, though, you will notice there comes a part where Jon is sitting behind that rock, just kind of like, I have no idea what to do. When he catches his eye on something, and then he stands up and he yells, go, 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 as he's basically just staring down this dragon. If you watch that scene and you with the idea that what he's seeing is Arya trying to get in into she's probably climbing a wall, trying to get up and over so that she can kill the Night King. It makes it a little more understanding, you know, that he basically created a distraction for her to get in and kill the Night King. I don't think it was that far off. They spent that whole, like, 5-10 minute scene of her sneaking around in the library, just showing that she's able to, it's foreshadowing, showing that she can sneak around and get by people with relative ease. So that didn't bug me as much as it did the first time I watched it. And it's another thing that if you go back and watch that scene, which I will tell everyone to do, it'll make a little bit more sense to you as well. So that's kind of the big issues that I saw people have with the show. However, the biggest one that I saw a lot of people complaining about was how the scorpions, which are the gigantic crossbows that they use to shoot the dragons, how they went from being like a sniper rifle and just knocking Rhaegal out of the sky easily to the next episode not being able to hit anything. People were pissed about that and said it was lazy writing. That is actually not lazy writing at all. So a little background on me is I spent 6.5 years in the Army in a transportation unit. My job within that transportation unit, or one of my jobs, was I was a crew serve weapons gunner, which I'm basically the guy that sits on top of the Humvee or whatever with a machine gun. That's my job. Was my job. I've learned a few things from that, and I actually was able to take that and watch this scene and go, no, that makes a lot of sense. So that scene, Dany's flying through the sky. She's on Drogon. She's got Rhaegal with her. Rhaegal gets hit by an arrow, starts to fall, quickly gets hit by two more, falls in the ocean, and dies. When you are aiming at something and you're shooting, I'm just going to kind of paint a picture for you guys. There's two types of targets. There's what's called a point target and what's called an area target. Let's say we're aiming at just your traditional target, looks kind of like a dartboard, you know, circles with the middle being the bullseye, worth the most points type of thing. An area target is if I told you, hey, let's sit and I want you to hit that target. Area target is you just putting a bullet anywhere or an arrow, whatever you're using, anywhere on that target. A point target is me saying, hey, let's hit that bullseye. Point target is much harder to hit than an area target. Area targets are usually vast targets. So as the Iron Fleet, and you're sitting there and you're looking in the sky, and you see two dragons who are very close to each other, broadside to you, meaning the biggest part of their body is facing you, that's actually not a hard shot, because all you need to do is aim in that general direction and you're probably going to hit something. Not to mention the fact that they did not know the Iron Fleet was there. They were very complacent in what they were doing. That was an easy shot. And as soon as they hit that first one, they were able to line it up and they were able to sink a few more rounds into that target. Dany then turns and faces them and charges them. And they have a much harder time hitting her. She ends up pulling out so that she doesn't get hit, because it's accuracy through volume. One of them is eventually going to hit its target. That didn't upset me. That was actually, I thought, very realistic. You know, when they had an easy target, they hit it. It could have been either Dany on Drogon or it could have been Rhaegal. It was Rhaegal. He was in front of them. They took him down. That didn't bug me. The next part that bugged other people was that in the next episode, those scorpions couldn't hit the broadside of a barn. They couldn't hit anything. Well, I think that was another thing that was really well done, because if you go back and you watch that episode, Dany takes her dragon really high into the sky, way up there, and puts the sun behind her as she charges down at them. What that did is that means anyone that's aiming at her is staring at the sun. You've all tried to look at the sun at one point in time. You can't look at it for very long. It's really hard to see. So she put the sun at her back and she flew in and she went down low. Very low, which took those scorpions and she used their weakness against them. They're slow moving. They're slow to reload. They got what, 5 or 6 guys to move that thing and try and aim it. And then one guy to fire. So she went in low, wiped out the Iron Fleet, stayed low as she charged the wall, waited for all of those scorpions to aim down at her again. in fire before she popped up and went above them and just used their slow mobility to her advantage. And it worked. And I don't see that as being a problem. I thought that was well done. What an episode before that, when Bronn goes and talks to Tyrion and Jaime, he says something to the extent of, like, she has one dragon. I've seen what one dragon can do, a lot of damage. And he's right. One dragon could do a lot of damage. I think the show did a good job of pointing that out. I mean, she just decimated, literally on her own, more or less desolated that entire enemy force with one dragon. I don't have a problem with that. I thought it was well done. I think once you look at it with that knowledge, saying, hey, you know, they did have an easier time hitting a dragon when there was two of them flying in the sky, not trying to evade. It's really easy to hit one. They're close together. And then she, like I said, she used their weakness against them. I don't think that was poor writing. I think that was actually really well done writing. It just wasn't... maybe you have to have that background that I have to appreciate that fully. I don't know, but that's my reasoning for it. Take from it what you want. I didn't think it was that bad. I thought that was actually a pretty well done scene. Things about the show that I don't like, or things I wish we would have gotten to see. The show has always done a good job of building up to moments and fulfilling on those moments, really until the last three seasons. There were some big moments that were really lackluster, and there were big moments that were really good. Obviously, like the Battle of the Bastards is one of my favorite scenes in the show. But the thing that really bugged me was when they kind of stopped showing important deaths. Like when Brienne kills Stannis, they've been building up to that since season two. She's been looking for him. She finds him at the end of season four. End of season four, maybe. I don't remember. They don't show her kill him. They don't show that. Then there's the whole thing where Arya is with the Faceless Men, and she's running from the Waif. And the Waif chases Arya down into that room. Arya hits the candle, and that's the end. We don't get to see that fight. Like, they built up to that for like three, four, the whole season, really. They built up to that just to see her knock a candle off and we don't see anything. That really irritated me. And they did that a lot in this newest season with when Jon goes to tell Sansa and Arya who he really is. They build up to it and they just cut to another scene. Like, we don't get to see the reactions of the characters. We don't get to see that conversation. I felt we should have been given that. I felt like there was going to be redemption when Sansa goes to tell Tyrion, and they skip by that again. So we don't get to see any of this huge plot points we don't get to see the conversation of them figuring out this knowledge. We just skip, and then they know. That pisses me off royally. I wanted to see their reactions. I wanted to see that conversation, and I wanted to see how it went over. We don't get it. I felt that was gypped completely. That also, the whole segue, like, you know, talking about who Jon really is, they spent a lot of seasons, not episodes, seasons building up to figure out he was Aegon Targaryen. Whole thing of, like, don't tell anyone. Okay, now eight people know, blah, 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 blah. For what reason? None. Nothing. Him being a Targaryen was completely irrelevant. That whole conversation at the end when they're picking a king, dude, no one even brings it up. And like half the people there know. Sansa, Bran, Arya, Sam. I mean, that's four people. Tyrion, that's five people who know who he really is. They're trying to figure out who should be king, and they don't even bring it up for conversation. No one says a damn word about it. It really, really makes me mad. That whole Jon is the rightful heir was pointless. They didn't even need to put it in the show. Just could have kept it out because it wasn't even a conversation at the end. It was, let's have Edmure Tully stand up and smack his sword on a chair and talk about how we should have a democratic vote. That was over. The comic relief overshadowed that whole scene. They skipped it. Just That is the stuff that made me mad. That it's all pointless. And I feel the same way. So we had the Red Wedding. The phrase betrayed the Starks, killed Rob, killed Catelyn, killed Rob's wife, the baby that she was pregnant with. Then a few seasons later, we get to see Arya get revenge, wipe out the phrase. Why didn't that become something they talked about later on? I wish there would have been some sort of a scene where Cersei is talking about she's gathering her forces to prepare to fight Dany. And she goes, okay, you know what? It's time for the phrase to come into the fight, come into the fray, if you will. I wish there would have been, she would have said something like that. And Qyburn, her exiled maester, I wish she would have said something like, well, the Frey is, you know, Walder Frey is dead. And she goes, well, get his son or one of his sons. He's got so many. And he goes, they're all dead. And, she, you know, what? And he goes, yeah, I guess from what we understand is the Starks killed them all. One Stark did. Arya, she killed all of them. She poisoned his whole family line and said this, you know, said what she said. Like, there was nothing, they skipped out on that. And that would have been such a cool scene to see, like, Cersei slowly realizing that, like, stuff's falling apart. You know, that like, all the Freys are dead. She didn't get the elephant she wanted. You know, stuff of that nature. Like, we didn't get to see that, and it bums me out because it would have been a cool scene to see Cersei, like, holy shit, the Starks wiped out a whole family house, and we had no idea. Like, it was something that was missed, in my opinion. Another thing I wish we would have gotten to see at the end of last night's episode was a conversation between Jon and Tormund, mainly because Tormund and Jon are my two favorite characters in the entire show. Jorah was up there with another one, and Tyrion. That's probably my top four that were in the final season. But I wanted to see a conversation between Jon and Tormund about why Jon was there. Could have been some funny banter between Tormund, but it was just another thing that was kind of missed. And you know, it's like Jon not petting Ghost at the end of season or episode 4 or 5 or whatever it was. They had a lot of cool moments they could have had and they missed. But instead, we see like 2 minutes of Jon walking up a staircase to go find Dany. Like, they're just very poorly managed in my mind. Another thing that bugged me is Brienne staying in King's Landing to be a Kingsguard for Bran. That to me makes sense, but feels weird because she made that oath to protect protect Catelyn Stark's daughters, and that was a big plot point for her, is that she was trying to get to and protect the Stark girls, and then for her just to up and leave Sansa's side and protect Bran. We didn't have a conversation in there of why they did that, and it just felt off to me. So it's not the end of the day, it's not the biggest thing in the world, but it just felt weird to me that she didn't do that. One of the things, I'm going to just kind of talk about a couple things about characters now that upset me. Not upset me, but the whole thing about Jon being who he was, being skipped over. I just want to talk about how him being, if he was king, his story, the way his life went, was so properly raised. He was so properly raised to be in that position, for someone you would want to be a king. So he lived in a castle in Winterfell with one of the most powerful men in the kingdom, his uncle, Ned Stark. The North is the biggest kingdom in all of Westeros. So you got to think, after the king, you know, who's going to be the most powerful? It's going to be the Warden of the North. He controls the biggest area. So he grew up there with Ned in a, I'm not going to say royal, but in a noble family, which granted him the things that noble families get. You know, he got to learn how to fight with a sword. He was well-versed in combat and warfare and tactics and things like that from an early age, which benefited him going on. But he was never spoiled. He didn't get all the benefits, like the eccentric benefits that go with being someone of a noble line. You know, he wasn't allowed at feasts. He had to go eat outside. He was the bastard that was always lingering over him. He had a very humbling, upbringing. He had a very humbling upbringing that carried over to him at the Night's Watch. You know, he went in, kind of not with a bad attitude, but everyone at first looked at him like, you know, oh, you're this, you know, some lord's son. You probably think you're all that. And he wasn't, you know, he went from being hated for not being good enough to being hated for being too good. And he became a steward. And then he went north of the wall and he learned kind of, you know, that the people that he thought were evil weren't really evil. I mean, they were fighting, but they were people that were just fighting to survive. So he kind of learned that not everything is black and white. He got to learn that, you can't take everything for face value. You need to get down and meet the common people. That's kind of what he did. Then he gets, you know, he dies and doesn't want to fight anymore. He comes back, doesn't want to fight anymore, yes, he wants Winterfell to be back to the Starks, but he's not super excited about going to fight for it. Doesn't want to be king, becomes king in the North. Just his story, his whole story is so good for someone who you'd want to be in that position of power. And they talk about that in the show. You know, maybe it's time we have someone king who's doesn't want the job. I mean, the dude's won wars. He can lead people. The people love him. You know, he's got their respect. Like, that's the guy we want as king. And I think that was really cool. That's really why he's one of my favorite characters. a couple other things. So I thought it was kind of cool. They've always shown that the dragons were of a little bit higher intelligence. So, and that they are magically connected to the Targaryens in the same way that the direwolves are magically connected to the Starks, which is cool if you're Jon, because then essentially you could have had a dragon and a direwolf. I think that's pretty sweet. But he sensed that Dany was hurt. Drogon did. He came down, and he didn't hurt Jon, which I thought was kind of cool. Like, he understood. It was weird. He's like, he understood what Jon did, and so Dany didn't die because Jon killed her. He died because her actions to try and get the throne led her to that moment. And so he burned down the throne. I thought that was kind of cool. Maybe not the whole burning down the throne part. I thought that was kind of a little too symbolic, but it made sense. And it was cool that he didn't hurt Jon, because I do think that the dragons sensed the Targaryen blood in him, if you will. So I thought that was kind of cool. But speaking of Dany, while I do feel that her, I'm going to say the descent into madness, if you will, was very rushed, I don't think it was like it had, there was some buildup to it. She's always wanted to really go after the people that oppose her and stand against her. And, you know, it's not, she burned and killed a lot of people. She, you know, everyone in Dash Kalin, she burned all the calls. She burnt the lady. I mean, she's burnt a lot of people. So it wasn't a huge switch for her to go crazy. But I do think one of the things that really happened to her is she lost all her voices of reason. You know, if you watch back in the other seasons, she has a lot of people advising her, from Baratheon Selmy to Jorah Mormont to Tyrion to Missandei. Like, she's got a lot of people advising her. And then we go to the end, not the episode four. We go to episode four when they're all sitting in the Great Hall after the battle, eating, laughing, talking. She's alone. She's by herself. No one is there. No one loves her. I mean, she looks, you know, Jaime, Tyrion, and Brienne are down there laughing, having a good time. She looks over at Jon. Everyone's over there talking about how amazing Jon is. He's flying around a dragon. He's killing people. She was doing the same thing. She was flying around on a dragon. She was doing her part, and yet no one is there showing their love for her. I think that and the loss of her advisors really played a big point. And most of the show, she's always wanted to do something drastic, and there's always been someone who talked her out of it. You know, when Barrison Selmy told her about her father and about her brother, she just didn't have that anymore. So it felt really rushed. You know, she went from kind of a I'm not a bad person to I'm killing everybody. But the buildup for it was there. It just could have been done better, I think. I don't know really what I'm trying to say here. It wasn't bad, but it wasn't the standard that we've had through the rest of Game of Thrones. I guess that's the best way to say it. We slowly got to see her descent into madness, and then it just dropped off very dramatically. So it is what it is. The show touched on, but never went anywhere with the prophecy of Azor Ahai or the prince who was promised. I always thought it was Jon. Who knows? But the show touches on it and then does nothing with it. Just like, excuse me, a lot of things that they've done with the show. And I thought that sucked. Like, I would have been cool to see some more about the prophecy of the prince who was promised in Azor Ahai. And if you don't know who that is, and you haven't read the books, just Google it. There's a good wiki out there for Game of Thrones that talks about everything in general. Check it out. There's a prophecy that there's going to be one person, prince, who basically leads the fight in against the Long Night, so the White Walkers, leads it and wins. And I thought it was going to be Jon. The show touches on it, but never goes anywhere with it, so whatever. The show in the last season did a lot of the whole we're going to touch on things and not go anywhere with it. One of the things that bugged me is that we never got to see who Varys was writing to. They alluded to he was trying to poison Daenerys, and he was writing that letter to somebody where we saw, you know, Jon, the rightful heir, Eddard Stark. Like, we saw a couple keywords in there. And then Tyrion says, you've been betrayed, blah, blah, blah. I want to know who he's writing to. Like, who out there is he telling this important knowledge to once again have that knowledge go absolutely nowhere? It's just the MO for Game of Thrones season 8. Like, now that I'm kind of talking about this more, like, I'm starting to realize, like, I am liking the last season less and less. But that being said, I still don't think the season was absolutely terrible. I just think that the Game of Thrones was kind of backwards. Other shows tends to be the first few seasons start out weaker and then it gets better with time. Game of Thrones are the opposite. The first four or five seasons were terrific, and then they kind of started to teeter off. One of the things the show never did that the books did do is there's a character in the books called Young Griff. Tyrion is on a boat, I believe, because I'm not this far in the book yet. I've read the first three. I've just been kind of researching some things. I think it's after he kills his dad and he's being kind of smuggled out of King's Landing. He's on a boat and he runs into this character named Young Griff, who's this blue-haired character with purple eyes. And if you read the books, you know that the Targaryens, the big tales for Targaryens is the like white blonde hair with purple eyes. This character is supposed to be Aegon Targaryen, so he'd be Jon's older brother, Rhaegar and Elia Martell's son, Aegon, the one that Sir Gregor Clegane smashed. Basically, when he killed the baby, you raped her, you murdered her, you killed her children. Sir Gregor Clegane, the Mountain, smashed this baby against a wall. Just a brutal. That was Aegon Targaryen. However, in the books, Young Griff tells Tyrion that Varys had swapped the babies out. He had found a tanner, someone who had a bunch of sons, bought a baby from him and swapped it out. Basically smuggled Aegon to safety, and Aegon is on this boat with what would have been, and someone can correct me on this, I'm probably getting it wrong, one of his father, Rhaegar Targaryen's, like, best friends, was raising him in secrecy. So technically, if Jon in the books is a Targaryen, that would make three Targaryens. Dany, Aegon the Sixth, and Aegon the Seventh being Jon Snow. There's also speculation in the books that Tyrion is also a Targaryen, because the Mad King, him and Tywin Lannister had a lot of issues between them, and they think that King Aerys, like, may have raped or done something and slept with Tywin's wife, and that Tyrion is Tyrion's a product of that, and then he could be a Targaryen himself. It's cool little theories in the books that they never really, those two things they don't touch on in the show, and I kind of wish they would, especially young Griff. It would have been cool to see another Targaryen. It would have been very interesting to say, hey, there's three Targaryens, and then you realize that Dany would actually be, like, the lowest on the line of succession, because technically it would be Jon's brother, Aegon, which is weird that they both have the same name, Aegon Targaryen, the Sixth and the Seventh. So it'd be probably Aegon, Jon, and Dany, or would it be Jon, Dany, Aegon? Because if the wedding was annulled, who would be the crown prince then? Would it be the eldest son, or would it be, like, I feel like it would be Jon, but that could just be me being biased. But, you know, he's married to the, if the Mad King died, Rhaegar becomes king. His queen would have been Illyanna Stark. So someone can correct me if I'm wrong, but that might have made Jon then the next rightful heir to the throne. I don't know. Interesting dynamic. They don't even touch it on the show. There's not really a point. But let's wrap up. Let's wrap this up. We've been talking for a while now. Time to wrap this up. The show, it's a good show. One of my favorite shows. The last two seasons could have been better, I will admit. The last episode in itself, I didn't think it was terrible. I thought they ended the show very lacklusterly. Talked about my problems with it. But the kind of the cool thing is, if you look at it, the Starks really all got what they wanted from the very beginning. Sansa got to be queen. Arya isn't some lady, you know, married in some holdfast, you know, knitting clothes. She's exploring and being a badass like she is. And Jon gets to be in the Night's Watch, which is what he wanted from the beginning. So I thought that was kind of, I don't know if poetic's the right word, but it is what it is. The Starks, though, however, now control everything. I mean, you got Bran controlling the Six Kingdoms. You've got Sansa controlling the North. And then Jon, if we're led to believe that he is going north of the Wall and is going to stay, I don't think the North would elect a king because there's no reason. But if they did, you'd have to think it'd be Jon. I mean, so he'd be the king north of the Wall. Another thing, I don't know if everyone, go back and rewatch that final season. You see snow melting on the trees in the North, which is interesting because maybe the North, now the Night King's gone, will finally thaw out and be like luscious greens again. I don't know. It's something I picked up on. Just kind of cool to speculate about. But that's what I've got for you guys. Like I said, I don't think the last season was that great. But it wasn't terrible. I think they just were rushed to wrap it up. So anyway, as always, love to hear what you guys have to say. You know, leave me some comments on my Facebook, Iconic Fanboy. I'm on there. Give it a follow if you will. Let's talk about this stuff, dude. I love talking about this stuff, and I like having people to talk with it too. So don't be shy, man. Hit me up. Let's talk about it. But for the rest of you guys have a good night, and I will see you hopefully next week.